Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill, who's off this week. I'm glad to have you along, providing some faith, hope, and clarity on the news of the day. We've got great guests that will do that this hour, including David Aikman. I always love chatting with David. We get some good thoughts about what's happening in China and North Korea and Iran and, you know, here at home as well. Talk about that and more with David Aikman. David Bailey also joining us today. David's founder, executive director of Erebon. Learn about that as ministry to help churches bring racial reconciliation, both internally and externally. And, of course, yesterday, Dr. Martin Luther King Day, so you may have had the day off. Hope you enjoyed it. And we have a great program yesterday. If you missed it, we were talking a little bit about it. You can find connections on our website, myfaithradio.com. When you go there, you can also find a link to the Live Free Challenge. And Rebecca, we were just talking a little bit during the news about getting signed up for that. We're asking you to sign up here this month so that during February we can join hundreds. We walk, run, and ride to raise money for rescue and rehabilitation of trafficking victims in a partnership with the International Justice Mission. I guess the question is how much do we sign up for?
How many miles?
Sure.
That's my ethical dilemma.
Sure.
Because I'm trying to sign up right now. I want to do this. I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
So I guess this is instant accountability for everyone listening. I'm going to do the Live Free Challenge. So hopefully y'all will join in with me. Yeah. And I wasn't sure if I should set what I think is an attainable goal, because they give you some suggested goals. And one of them is a mile a day.
Okay.
28 days in February, 28 miles. And I was thinking, well, I could probably do that, walk or run 28 miles. And then I thought, is it right to set a goal that I think I can reach? Or should I go for something I think is going to challenge me? Which one is the better option? What do you think, Neil?
I've always said if mediocrity is your goal, you're always at your best. So that's my two cents there.
Wisdom from Neil Stavem.
Not good wisdom, but my goal is to see the Vikings come back and play the Super Bowl at home.
It's within their grasp.
Oh, wow. Thanks to that, what they call it, the miracle in Minneapolis, that we've heard of walk-off home runs. Very seldom we have a walk-off touchdown, but that was truly amazing Sunday night. A lot of fun. Wow. Enjoyed that. Vikings quarterback Case Keenum talking after the game about the best days of his life after tossing that game-winning touchdown to send the team to the title game Sunday. Keenum told reporters it's probably the third best day of his life. He said the best day was when he gave his life to Christ, and then marrying his wife, the second best, and this would be the third. So,
yeah, he's a good athlete, and he's got great priorities.
I like that. He first asked out his future wife at a Fellowship of Christian Athletes event as a senior in high school. So,
does the story get even better?
Oh, it doesn't. Yeah, you got to love it. So it's going to be a lot of fun this weekend, the football weekend. And we're going to have some good conversation coming up in the moments ahead, too. So I want to encourage you to stay tuned. Just around the corner, David Bailey joining us here on the Early Morning Late Show. It's the Early Morning Late Show, 9 past the hour. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold today, and honored to have you along, and grateful to have David Bailey in studio. Dave is founder and executive director of Erebon, and he's in the area for the pastor's conference at Bethlehem Church. So thanks for coming over. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I know you've been on with Bill in the past, and it's just nice to make the connection and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, likewise.
So maybe just a little review. We need to talk about what Erebon is and how it came about, maybe how God inspired you, moved you to move in this area.
So. Yeah, well, so I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. Richmond, Virginia, was the number one exporter of slaves, the kind of business that was Richmond was into. They were actually into kind of breeding human people and became an exporter slave in that business. And then the Civil War happened. It was the capital of the Confederacy. And when the Civil War was over, Abraham Lincoln came to my city, ran the bottom of the hill of my neighborhood, and just saw that, yeah, it was a burned down or not. And then, you know, later on, as Jim Crow came and desegregation happened, Virginia was also the one that kind of helped lead a lot of the mass resistance and things of that nature. So when I started growing up in the 80s, I mean, I think in some ways the hostility was over, but the fruits of that history, the legacy of the history was still there. And my parents were really involved with collaborations and urban ministries with suburban ministries with black and white. And I just grew up in a household doing that. And I also took towards music. And when you basically are a musician, as particularly as a producer, you end up being a cultural anthropologist where you get a chance to know how to resonate with this culture and that culture and how to get something in the marketplace. And I realized, you know, in most churches, we only apply cultural anthropology to ministries overseas, and we don't do that in our local churches. And so I said, you know what? We need to help pastors and help our church leaders think not only cultural anthropologically, but we also need to help them understand how the legacy of the past affects us today. And if we don't do something about it and create new culture, then we're going to continue to perpetuate the same things, even though our intentions have changed.
Yeah. Just thinking as you were sharing a bit of your story, that, you know, thank God for parents that led the way, and think that's part of perpetuating the right values and views, isn't it? I mean, parents have such a key role. If they have their minds right, their kids are going to pick up on that.
Yeah. And I think it's even more so than like my parents were very intentional in discipleship. When I was in second grade, my dad bought me a Bible and my sister a Bible, and he said, hey, you're going to read two chapters of the Old Testament, two chapters of the New Testament, Proverbs and Psalms every day. And that's what we just did. And so I became very Bible literate. And they saw discipleship as their responsibility, and the church was supplemental to their responsibility. And so I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about your neighborhood in Virginia and saying that, you know, the hostility is over. You know, after the Civil War, but I wonder, you know, maybe we ask that question today, is hostility over? I mean, where are we today?
You know, I think there's a scale of hostility, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in most people, you know, most people today, you know, Charlottesville is about an hour away from our house. I think what surprised us was that we were like, man, people don't think that like way anymore. And if they do, they don't look like those people over there. Like, they didn't fit our stereotypes. They look like my friends. They look like maybe, you know, your sons. You know, it was that's what really surprised us. And so I think in some ways, you still do have people who are radical for things of that nature. But excuse me. But most of us fall in the category of I think there are social and legal things that are happening that are part of the legacy and the residue of what's happened before. And those things are hostile. You know, I mean, the reality is, you know, somebody that is darker gets harsher sentences than somebody that is lighter. You know, somebody who is guilty and rich gets off easier than somebody who is could be innocent and poor just because of the fact they don't have the kind of finances to be have a good legal system. And these are things that are very challenging to this day, and race plays into that. It was 50 years ago that a African-American or a person of color could buy a house. It became illegal to discriminate against housing. Well, you know, you think about the way wealth is created in the United States. That's not that long ago. You know, that's my parents were part of that discrimination. So that meant the house that they bought over 50 years ago could not be used to help to have enough money to help us to go to college free of debt. And so these things affect us today, even though hostility and the Jim Crow sense of the word is gone. The legacy is still hostile.
Really kind of a cascade of events, isn't it? I mean, yeah. One thing affects another and another.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's history. And I think a big challenge in our Christian circle is that we just we don't want to look at the ugly part of history, the sinful, broken part of history. And I think that's the great part about being a Christian. Like, you and I don't have to be perfect. Matter of fact, it's good if we confess our sins one to another so that we can be healed. And I think we need to not only do that personally, but I think that we need to be able to do that systemically as a country and other areas that affect our brothers and sisters that might look different than us.
Well, David Bailey is in studio today, founder and executive director of Erebon, and we're going to talk about how the church can engage, way it needs to, how it can, and maybe some very practical, tangible thoughts from David in the moments ahead here as we continue on the Early Morning Late Show, 16 past the hour. David Bailey in studio today. David's in the area for a pastor's conference. In fact, David's founder and executive director of Erebon. It is a ministry to help churches bring racial reconciliation, both internally and externally. And I know you were part of a panel discussion yesterday or last night on Martin Luther King Day. Just say a little bit about what you addressed to other pastors and what's your message today.
Well, you know, one of the things we talked about last night was that, you know, we got to have an honest, sobering view of our history and realize that 50 years ago isn't that long ago. And that's assuming that every unjust, racialized, legal law that was passed is done. And actually, I think I would even argue in other places that there still are things that are really messed up even legally in our country. And I love our country. You know, I choose to live here. And but there still are things that are just everything isn't right. And I think it's real important that we as Christians know that isn't right and to be informed. I think another thing is if we understand the depth of the problem, then we just realize that, friendships isn't the only thing that's going to make a change. We definitely need to be friends and be family. I heard somebody say it this way. Sandra Van Opstel says it that something that's perceived as political for one person can also be pastoral for another person. And, you know, when your family becomes international, when your family becomes of a different race, when your family is of a different socioeconomic space, the conversation changes. And the reality is that, like, your problems are my problems, and my problems are your problem because we're brothers. And particularly if we're in a local church together, or particularly if we're in a community together, a Christian community together. And a big challenge is our churches are segregated. So people with certain kind of pastoral concerns are not in church with people with other kind of pastoral concerns. So we perceive it as political, and that's not something, quote, unquote, the church should be dealing with. And that's oftentimes like what keeps us segregated, and that's also why we don't have that much of a difference in what's going on in the world and what's going on in the church. They seem to be very similar. So I think being intentional about being informed about things, I think engaging in relationships, but understanding the relationships is an entry point to understanding what my brothers and sisters are suffering with, and then at that point I get implicated and I need to do something also.
Well, let's talk about the do something, because it's one thing to know. It's another thing to engage in friendships. But what does that next step look like?
So one of the big things that we focus on in our ministry is, we focus on some of the doing something is grow in your cultural competency so that you can, one, be culturally intelligent, and two, also grow in your understanding of what the practice of reconciliation. Reconciliation is messy because you're dealing with brokenness. You know, and you just don't fix brokenness overnight. You know, it becomes a spiritual formation thing that happens that allows you to become more and more like the Christ, like likeness of Christ. I think another do something is also you got to develop the kind of leaders that you want to see in the world. And so we focus, we do this urban songwriting internship where we educate young people between the age of 18 and 25. And we're trying to help them to be woke, as the young people say, and help them to kind of be informed about the challenges going on in the world and to give a biblical worldview on it. But instead of writing papers, they write songs. They write worship songs, and they write things to kind of help form and create new culture. And that's the third thing that we try to encourage people to do is you have to create new culture. You have to we are here today because of the leaders and the culture that was made yesterday. So if you want to see something different tomorrow, we got to create a new culture today. And those are the three things we do. Get informed and learn, develop the kind of leaders and the people that you want to see in the world, and create new culture.
And as you mentioned, you started out with working in music. I mean, that's a pretty key part of culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a key part. Yeah, I mean, I tell people this. I said, you know, who has more influence in the world today? Pastors or artists? But when somebody gets called to ministry, we always want them to be a preacher. But songs and culture and artists are the things that influence. So, you know, there's this group that a disciple that we raised up called Urban Doxology. And they are basically taking, just looking at the scriptures and looking at what's going on in the world and trying to give a biblical foundation and understanding of Jesus, justice, and reconciliation. If we leave it all to the Beyoncés and the Jay-Z's, and then, you know, we just have kind of simple Me and Jesus songs in the church, then who's going to win the battle? You know, we got to send out and disciple biblical sounding great artists in the world writing songs that are concerned about the pastoral and concerns of a lot of people.
And then for us to listen to those,
yeah.
Right? So that
yeah.
We can understand them too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so,
yeah. And just like if you kind of end up having a visceral reaction to something and you find you don't like it, try to understand it before you judge like whether or not you like something or not. That's one thing I really, really try to do. I try to like at least be able to articulate something the best way, the best version of somebody else's argument before I decide on whether or not I like something or not. I think sometimes we find the worst of somebody else's argument and be like, oh, that's stupid. But our posture already wasn't to seek to understand before we seek to be understood, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds pretty radical.
Man, you know, I just really think that's what Jesus calls us to do. I mean, like, when I look at the scriptures, I mean, being a Christian is radical. Like those guys out in Charlottesville were radical. The Antifa that came to fight the people, they were radical. You know, the folks that are frustrated with some of the things going on in the city and might burn some stuff down, that's radical. And so, like, who's going to be radical for reconciliation? Like, we need some Christians that are going to be radical for reconciliation to say, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to be like Jesus. And you know what Jesus did? He came out and he healed. He touched the untouchables. And ultimately, he died for the sake of others. And I just think that's what it's called to be a Christian, you know? I don't like dying like the way you are, but in many ways, you know, we're all called, like Jesus said, to die. And not just to die for ourselves, but to die for the sake of others. That's key to being a Christian.
Give us a website. We want to find out more. Get plugged into the work you're doing, and it's spreading across the globe, which is great. But say more about that.
So we have a study series called Race, Class, and the Kingdom of God, and it's just a way to kind of help people go through this week at a really affordable price. It's called Arabon.com. Go ArrAbon.com. ArrAbon.com. Arabon. Arabon means a foretaste of things to come, and we just are really trying to help the church to be a foretaste of what heaven is going to be like. And then, you know, if you want to check out the music, go to Urban Doxology, Urban Doxology. And, you know, they're on iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp, all the places where you can listen to music.
Sure. David, blessings to you and your work. Thanks for leading the way and encouraging us to follow along. It's been great.
Thanks.
David Bailey, join us today, founder and executive director of Arrabon. Check it out, Arrabon.com, ArrAbon.com, and also look for Urban Doxology as well. You're listening to the Early Morning Late Show. We've got Breakpoint coming up in a minute. Oprah running for president? Well, we'll see. We'll get to that just ahead. I do like John Stone Street, Eric Metaxas. Wow, great insight as always, Rebecca. Isn't it just, but Oprah, president.
You never know. You know, I think if she ran, she might very well win.
Well, and, you know, you just don't get to use the word gooey very often. So I appreciated that.
That's why people listen to Faith Radio, Neil.
That's right.
For our words of the day.
We've got some, we got some faith. No, I think that's the real recovery. I think that's where you get that. Bill is off this week. I'm Neil Stavem sitting in. And we're looking forward to the conversation with David Aikman, one of the regular guests in the Early Morning Late Show. He'll join us here in about 10 minutes. I hope you can stick around for that. Right now, though, it's time to take a little news break. A moment ago, you heard Ted Ross talking about anxiety and some insight from Dr. Tim Jennings. You can find more on that on our website, myfaithradio.com. Maybe part of it has to do with needing friends. Peter Greer is author and CEO of Hope International. And he's talking to us today about keeping friendships in midlife. He says, you know, sometimes it's hard to know how to love our friends when they're struggling with big issues. And Peter has some advice.
Just love them. Follow the example of Jesus. Just love them. And that becomes something that is independent of circumstances. It's something that allows you when life doesn't turn out or when people hurt you so deeply. How do we respond? And it's not looking back. It's not looking to her side. It's not looking inward at her own hurt. It is looking up, looking to the example of our Lord who showed us what love looks like, and then doing our best for however many days we have left to follow in that example, love one another as I have loved you. And again, maybe that sounds trite, but it is powerful if we would really be able to live that out. Love one another as I have loved you. That is a powerful mission for our second half.
Peter Greer has written a great book about the second half of life, and you can find the full interview on our website, myfaithradio.com. Look for midlife, friendships, Peter Greer. Do the search there, and you'll get some great insight. So we hear great insight. We're just a minute away from great insight from David Aikman, who will join us in a moment here on the Early Morning Late Show.
Kids make mistakes, sometimes really stupid mistakes. But when your team messes up, do you come unglued? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I find that too many Christian families have a love affair with perfectionism. And that means when a teen does something wrong, it either ignites an ugly altercation, or worse yet, it gets silently swept under the carpet like nothing happened. Sound familiar? When mistakes are made, how about saying something like this? Son, you don't have to perform for me, then say this. Son, I won't leave you when you do something wrong. They're some of the most healing words spoken in families today. Next time your kid goofs up, try practicing grace.
Get a free online parenting course called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Oh, and he's just as suave now as he was back then. David Aikman, back on the line with us, a regular visit with David here in the Early Morning Late Show. I always love having him on. He's award-winning journalist and correspondent and author, and he's checking in with us today on this 16th day of January. David, it was on this date in 1991. I kind of remember where I was when I heard the news. Operation Desert Storm began when the United States and launched air raids in Iraq. You remember where you were and got the news on that?
I was, yes. I was in Egypt at that time, actually. I was watching the Arab front at the time of the invasion of Iraq to see what kind of responses there would be from various Arab countries. It was a very, very interesting time.
Wow.
And I particularly remember the CNN correspondent who has since had some controversial issues with various networks. I'm sorry, trying to remember her name, but she was the daily news take on what was going on in the war. It was absolutely fascinating.
We were, I think, glued to our TVs. Well, we're—I don't know if we're in, Desert Storm, but it certainly seems like we're in a storm in terms of maybe our president. With, in fact, I noticed a report out of Freedom House says, that the president's attacks on the news media and brash foreign policy approach are fueling an ongoing worldwide assault on democracy. And of course, the latest his comments to his. Is congressional leaders about relating to DACA, but it seems like we're definitely in the midst of a storm in these last few days.
Well, I think the whole first year of the presidency has been a very kind of fast and furious affair, actually with some significant achievements, which have absolutely slipped under the radar because of all the noisy reactions to some of President Trump's statements. Now, admittedly, some of his statements have been somewhat provocative and wise, but the fact is people have focused on the externals of the presidency much more than they have on the substantial actions. And that, I think, is where we're going to see a very interesting reopening of the whole discussion this year.
From a European and maybe just a global perspective, I mean, do they, are they looking at the issues, or is it, the media continues on just hammering on, what Trump says, but are they looking at what he does?
Well, that's a good question, Neil. I think the Europeans mostly are absolutely obsessed with the latest Trump statement, the latest reaction to it. For example, in Davos, Switzerland, where they're going to have the annual economic summit among many countries in a couple of weeks, the big news is that Macron of France and Merkel of Germany are going to show up there. And since President Trump is going to arrive in the second week, there was a lot of discussion about an impending battle between different worldviews. And the commentary from most of the European insiders is relentlessly critical and negative towards Trump. So I don't think that's going to be new, but it's a fascinating indication of how many Europeans view the current American presidency.
Well, he did cancel his UK visit, right? That certainly.
Well, he did. Yes, he certainly did, and I think the reading was a correct one because undoubtedly there would have been some very noisy protests. Yeah. It would have been rather unpleasant, perhaps embarrassing for their British hosts. But I think he also had a sense that this was not the right time to go. And so he used the excuse of not wanting to open the new American embassy on the south bank of the Thames as a reason not to come. So, like it or not, he won't be going over to Britain right away. But I'm quite sure he will go later in the year. And I suspect when he does, his reception will really be quite warm.
Well, he's certainly getting some criticism. I mean, the South African government announced yesterday that they're going to protest the disparaging remarks of claim that the president said. And, I mean, that a number of other nations, that seems a little maybe unprecedented, perhaps?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the worldwide reaction to his rather rude remarks about certain countries sending immigrants to the United States, coupled with a very sort of welcoming approach to Norway, that has raised suggestions that Trump wants immigrants to have white skin color rather than be from countries in Africa. But I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think what Trump wants is immigrants, legal immigrants from countries which have where people have attained real skills and can provide great benefits to the American economy. And you don't have to be a racist to view the world and realize that some parts of the world are extremely corrupt, badly ruled, dirty, and produce all kinds of oppressive governments. The words that Trump used, I would say, unfortunately, vulgar words, nevertheless reflected a reality on the ground that most people realize is the case. So you may not want to use particularly potty language terms, but there are some parts of the world where things are really disastrous because of the current ruling government and so on.
I love the opportunity to get clarity as well as some faith and hope with David Aikman, who's our guest on the Early Morning Late Show, making a regular appearance. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got world issues to talk about. We'll get to China, North Korea, and Iran, all that queued up, ready to go with David Aikman just ahead. Wow, 11 minutes to go before the top of the hour, and hardly enough time to get through big issues we want to talk about with David Aikman, award-winning journalist, correspondent, and author. And David, North Korea, maybe talking with South Korea. Let's hear more about that. Is that Olympics coming up soon?
Yes, that's it's a very interesting dialogue because it ends a couple of years of complete non-communication from North Korea with the South. You know, they have a hotline between North and South Korea, which is supposed to be operated at 9 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And every morning at 9, the South Koreans, for the last 2 years, have been putting a call through to their North Korean opposite number, north of the DMZ, and nobody's been replying, and they haven't actually received any incoming calls. All of a sudden, this communication link has been opened up again by the North Koreans, which is a promising sign of some kind of communication back and forth. And who knows? The North and the South Koreans could perhaps reach a diplomatic solution that would enable North Korea to climb down from its fierce nukes-only response to the United States and the world, and could lead to a sort of a weakening of this confrontational situation between Pyongyang and Washington.
Wow, that would be that's an item that we, as a church, ought to be praying about, because I mean, God can do a breakthrough in amazing ways. Let's hope for that.
Right.
The Olympics get started here in a month or so. Over in Asia as well, China's been cracking down on the church. I mean, I know you spent you know, a lot of time covering China, and there's so many you know, different. I mean, it's a big place, a lot of different views and behaviors. Can we say that China is as a whole cracking down on the church?
Oh, I think unquestionably. I mean, if you talk to people who know the human rights situations of Christians the best in China, particularly somebody like Bob Fu of the website ChinaAid.org, who keeps in daily contact with Christians and lawyers from many churches in many different parts of China, he says what's happening now is the worst crackdown on Christianity specifically since the Cultural Revolution that ended in 1976. So it is very, very difficult for Christians. I mean, here, you take the Golden Lampstand Church in Linfern City in Shanxi province, absolutely, literally blown up and then bulldozed by the local authorities under the instructions of the central government. This is absolutely an outrageous act of physical persecution of Christians in their place of worship. I don't think we've seen anything like this in recent years.
Is there a way to back down this growing tension?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, what you, I think, need is some kind of public pressure on the Chinese government, essentially to own up to what they're doing. I mean, their constitution says that religions are allowed to worship and to believe whatever they want to believe. But in practice, Christian leaders particularly have been subjected to these arrests and then imprisonment and torture and in places that they call black prisons. And a black prison is basically a location where sort of organized crime figures torture and terrify the prisoners that they've taken. Many of these prisoners have been Christian leaders from communities all across China. And this is a very insidious thing.
Well, speaking of Christians being jailed, there's, and of course, protests going on in Iran. We've got a couple of minutes to just talk about what's happening there. I know that despite the protests or the opposition, that Christianity has been growing in Iran. But what do you see happening with the ongoing protests in Iran?
Well, it looks for the time being that the danger to the regime that appeared to be posed by these grassroots spontaneous protests, often in parts of the country where the population was actually religiously rather conservative and supportive of the regime, those protests seem to have been effectively stamped out. And since there is no identifiable leadership of any sort of opposition movement, or if any leader raises his or her head, that person gets jailed very quickly. I don't think there's going to be an imminent resumption. But I have no doubt that in some order of time, there will be a resumption of grassroots reaction to this regime or rebellion against this regime because it's so unpopular. It wants to control everything you do in all aspects of your life. Nobody wants to live under a government that does that.
It was what, back in 2009, the U.S. government kind of stood by when the Green Revolution is going on. Is there a place for the government, U.S., to speak out at this time?
Well, actually, yes, President Trump has spoken out forcefully, and he was promptly slapped down by critics in the media in the United States for sort of not realizing that these protests reflected a sort of internal dispute between various factions within Iran. But look, we are the United States. We stand for representative government, constitutional freedom under the law, and we should stand up for any population group anywhere in the world that has the courage to resist these fiercely repressive regimes.
Well, David, we're going to wrap up on that note because that's a good final thought. And hopefully, as we've heard our conversation today, it's a prompt to pray about these global issues. God is still sovereign and in control. And David, we always appreciate the opportunity to get insight and clarity from you. Blessings to you and the rest of your day.
Thank you very much. Same to you, Neil.
David Aikman, award-winning journalist, correspondent, author, with us here on the Early Morning Late Show. We've just got a minute or so left. We'll wrap up. Stand by. Well, we highlight that as many times as we can, the Live Free Challenge. Time to sign up. Get ready for February. It could be a great month in impacting the fight against human trafficking. That's a noble cause to jump into. So find out more online, myfaithradio.com, or go to livefreechallenge.org. Thanks for joining us this morning in the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill. I wish you a great day ahead. We're going to talk about momentum today on Connecting Faith with Colin Smith, and you'll hear Colin in just a few minutes with his great Bible teaching on Unlocking the Bible. And if you missed part of today's show, you can always find podcasts posted. Go to the Early Morning Late Show page at myfaithradio.com. Mentioned Psalm 19 is a good verse to hang on to. May the words of my mouth, meditation of my heart, be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.